These shurim always bring out the best in the latest technology. Baruch Hashem. In the beginning of this week's parsha, the Torah says, "V'yatot etzabez b'nei Yisrael, v'chuei lech Hashem etzayizoch, kasis lamoor la'alos ner tamid." The Parshanei HaMikra on these psukim ask a number of questions. Among the notable questions, why the name of Moshe Rabbeinu is not found in this week's parsha, and there are different variety of answers that are provided for this question, and the language of the Atot Tetzaveh, as opposed to some other use of language, is also a question. This seems to be parallel to what it says a bit later, V'Atot Akrevi Lecha Sa'arun Ochicha, and there's a slew of questions that are asked by the Arachayim and other Rishonim on the parsha. One of the approaches I heard many years ago from my Rebbe, Rav Tzvi Dov Kanatovsky, Zichron Livracha, he suggested that perhaps what the Torah is telling us here is the following. That essentially Moshe Rabbeinu, the Ramban writes, is supposed to examine the Shemen to see if it fits the qualifications. If it's Kasis Lamor and the like, in order that it should be kosher to be used for the menorah. But what the Torah is apparently alluding to, by virtue of the fact, does not mention the name of Moshe Rabbeinu, that it's apparently Lav Davka Moshe Rabbeinu who is involved here. But essentially, even though Aaron HaKohen is the one who's the functionary, who's doing the avod in the Mishkan, and he's the one who's offering up the karbanos and the like, but the one who's directing traffic and ultimately orchestrating it is Moshe Rabbeinu. He represents Malchus Shel Torah. And therefore it's Lav Davka Moshe Rabbeinu. It's Moshe Rabbeinu and all those, as the Gemara says, Kol Mi Sherotzu Litol Yavo V'Yitol. Whoever wants to assume upon themselves the mantle of Torah can certainly do so, and that's a voluntary decision that each and every individual can make. Kahuna obviously is vested in the descendants of Aaron HaKohen, as the Rambam writes, Lazaro Shel Aaron. Malchus, of course, also has a clear venue, but Torah is something that applies, Kalarot Zalito Yavu V'Yitol. Therefore, perhaps the Torah is alluding to this, V'Atot Etzaves B'nei Yisrael, Tzav Davka Moshe Rabbeinu. It's Moshe and those who succeed him who decide to take upon themselves the achrayus, the responsibility of the Malchus Shel Torah. It's really a great schus, and now it's already a chazaka, for us to have Hagon HaRav Shechter. And Rav Shechter, all of us who know him, he's become, I would say, the ktovet, the address, not just in Chutz La'aretz, but all over the world. Literally, for people to direct questions to him, and to be zocheh and be nene from his shiurim, and at the same time, recognize what Rav Shechter has done for Klal Yisrael in the last 4 decades, which is really something which is probably unparalleled, b'chlal. And once again, we have the great schus of hearing Rav Shechter, and I don't personally understand exactly how he's able to survive. From what I understand, he goes from venue to venue, literally one after the next, and halavai Hashem should give him bracha natzlocha. He should be able for many, many years to come, and may have him in good health, he and his wonderful mishpacha, to be able to continue, and we should be able to be nene from someone whose entire chelo is la raisa.
Okay. Thank you very much. The Rambam lists off what he considers are the 13 principles of faith, Yud Gimel Ikari Hu Emuna, of the Jewish religion. And one of them is the famous line, Shalotehei, Sozos HaTor Lasehei Mukhlefes, Lotehi Torah Cheres, Meis HaBari Is Baruch Shmo, that we believe that the Torah cannot be changed. Why such an obstinate insistence that the Torah cannot be changed? Any legal system can be changed. Every constitution has rules and regulations how to change it. So Rav Soloveitchik has in one of his essays, one of his published essays, he writes that this is a point that was agreed upon by both the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, and Rav Chaim Volozhiner. They both say the same explanation, based on the same passage in the Zohar, that we believe that the Torah is not merely a collection of dinim. You have to do these mitzvahs, you're not permitted to do those averis. The Torah, in addition, it's a collection of dinim. When it says you have to keep Shabbos, that's what it means. You have to keep kashrus and taras hamishpacha. You have to observe the mitzvahs, keep shutam. But in addition to that, it's something much more than that. It's a description of Elokus. And we believe that everything in the world changes except for the essence of God. That's what the Novi says, Ani Hashem Lo Shanisi. The Novi Malachi says that God's essence doesn't change, since the Torah is a description of Elokus. So therefore we have this obstinate insistence, Shezos HaTorah Lo Asim Mochlef, is the Torah cannot change. the reform, this and our generation, this is the main point of disagreement between the Orthodox and the other factions of Judaism. They feel that the Torah can be changed. And we feel that even those who believe that Torah is Min HaShamayim, they believe the Torah can be changed. And we insist the Orthodox follow this Rambam's position. Torah will not be changed. Torah cannot be changed. The reform movement took the position many years ago that Darshin and Talmid Ikra, that whenever you have a mitzvah in the Torah, you know what the reason is for that mitzvah. So whenever you have a situation where the reason doesn't apply, so the whole mitzvah doesn't apply. Take, for example, Chazir. Why did God prohibit us from eating Chazir? So if you go to the A&P, they don't have any A&Ps there. When I go to the A&P, and they have a package of pork, they have a package of ham for sale, so it says on the package that you have to cook this pork to a certain high degree, otherwise you run the risk of getting sick from the trichinosis, from the bugs, whatever, the worms that crawl around in the pork. So they say, well, obviously the Torah, God forbade us from eating the pork because we're going to get trichinosis. But if you cook it to that high degree temperature, then it says on the package, you're not going to get trichinosis, right? So once the reason doesn't apply, so the mitzvah doesn't apply. So this is an interesting idea. This idea was presented by the Holy Tanna, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, the author of the Zohar. He's quoted in the Talmud as putting forth such a position, Dashina Taima Dikra, and every single mitzvah in the Torah, you have to delve into the mitzvah to try to figure out what's the reason for the mitzvah, and the rabbis can convene together and work out a reason. They can figure out a reason, and we assume that they can succeed in figuring out the correct reason. And Memela, whenever you have a situation where the reason doesn't apply, then the whole mitzvah does not apply. So the opinion of Rabbi Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon says, why is it osach kol beged almana? Why are you not permitted to take as a mashkin the clothing of an almana? So he says, obviously because you have to return the mashkin, if it's a ksus yom ba yom, ksus laila ba laila, and after masir Hashem Rabbi Shchein Hesel, the whole Gemara gives the whole explanation. So he, Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that we restrict that prohibition, osach kol beged almana, you're not permitted to take the clothing of an almana as a mashkin, only if she's an almana aniyah, if she's a poor almana, you're going to have to give it back by yom balayla. So it's going to look scandalous. You're giving it back her pajamas at 1 o'clock in the morning, she's standing, and then you open up the door, you give her back her pajamas, she's standing undressed, obviously on the other side of the door, she's going to give you the dress that she wore all day long. Then in the morning she has to go to work, so I'm going to go back to her apartment, give her back her dress. I have to give it back to Ksus El Mayom and the Ksus Laila Balayla. She's going to be undressed on the other side of the door. She's going to give me the pajamas. I want a mashkin. I don't want to walk away without a mashkin. So it's going to look scandalous. But if she's a wealthy almana, Mrs. Gimbel's, she borrowed $1 million from me, and she gave me, and I insisted on taking a mashkin. So she gives me 1,000 dresses as a mashkin. She's not going to ask for the dresses back. She has another 1,000,000 dresses. She doesn't need these dresses. So if she's an almana ashira, then Rabbi Shimon says the reason for the mitzvah doesn't apply, so therefore the mitzvah doesn't apply. So Rabbi Shimon may have, I don't know, Shimon may have thought, like the reform, that if you cook the pork till a high degree temperature, maybe he would agree with the reform that you're allowed to eat the pork. Could be they have the backing of a holy Tana. But Rabbi Shimon's opinion was outvoted. It's already 2,000 years that we haven't accepted, almost 2,000 years, we haven't accepted Rabbi Shimon's opinion. He was outvoted. Goodbye. There are some instances, though, where we do accept Dashin and Taim and Dikro. Times change, so sometimes the Dina HaTera change. There's a discussion in the Torah in Yeridah. There is one of the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah is Kisu Lachem HaSashira HaZos. We have a mitzvah to write the Sefer Torah. Every Jewish man, perhaps even the women, have an obligation to be involved in the writing of a Sefer Torah. So the Torah quotes from his father, the Rosh, that there's a possibility to say that Bizman HaZeh, since people don't really learn from Sefer Torah anymore, we all learn from printed Svarim. So maybe one is in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kisu Lachem HaSashira HaZos by buying written Svarim, a printed Svarim, as opposed to writing, commissioning the writing of a Sefer Torah. So the commentaries on the Torah have an argument between the Beis Yosef and the Bach. What exactly did the Rosh mean to say? It means to say that the nature of the mitzvah changed, that Bizman HaZeh, you don't have to write a Sefer Torah anymore. You only have to write, you only have to buy printed Svarim and you're Yotze the Mitzvah. Did the Rosh mean to say, no, that it's not sufficient to write a Sefer Torah today? You're not fully Yotze the Mitzvah unless you write a Sefer Torah and you buy a whole Jewish library. That's not enough, but you certainly have to write the Sefer Torah. So some of the Mefarshim on the tour say, no, the Rosh meant that you don't have to write a Sefer Torah at all. The whole nature of the Mitzvah changed. We live in changing times. Different world, different nature of the Mitzvah. So does the chapela, how can it be? What do you mean? You live in a changing world, so you change the... So the minchas aluzer, the minkacher, Hungarian who was always insistent on, you know, no changes, we don't accept any changes, he comes to defend this, he quotes the Achrayim es Kakasha, the Rosh doesn't make any sense, and he says, no, he understands this Rosh. He points out there's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that says one is obligated to bury a person the same day that they die, if it's possible, if it's reasonable. So there's a mitzvah to bury the person before the Shkia, if possible. And then there's a loisasei, even if you can't bury him before the Shkia, don't leave over the body till Amur HaShachar, till the next morning. And that's a loisasei. So the Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, what if you want to wait a day or two in order to get all the children, in order to get all the relatives, in order to notify all the people in the community that they should all attend the funeral? And you're just going to bury, let's say a guy dies an hour before the Shkia, the Cherek Kaddish, you can bury him now, but it'll be Boif and Mavuza, it won't be Mechubit. So the Mishnah says, Hey Lineu Lechvodo, if the Melin is Ameis, Lechoven Ameis, the motivation was Lechvod Ameis, then it's permissible. So some of the Achareidim asked the Kasha, how can the Mishnah say that? We don't paskin like Rab Shimon, we paskin Leidashin in time in the Kruah. Even if you know quite well what the reason for the mitzvah is, and you figure out that in a certain situation the reason doesn't apply, but the mitzvah still applies. So how can the Mishnah say over here that since the reason for the Halonas HaMeis, the reason for the prohibition of Halonas HaMeis is that it shouldn't be a bizoin to the Meis, if you're motivation for being made on the Sameis is to bring more kavod to the Meis, then it's permissible. You're not allowed to change the nature of the mitzvahs. So Minchas Alos explains that that's not a kasha. Why? Because the Pasuk says explicitly the reason for the mitzvah. It says, Nasolim v'losal, it's kavod to gebet abu yamahu ki, kilolos elakim talui. And whenever the Chumash says the reason for the mitzvah next to the mitzvah, then the Gemara says in Sanhedrin in the second parak that even the Chachamim, the Rab Shimon, agree, dashin in time of the Kroh. Loi dashina time of the cross when the Chumash writes a din stoma and it doesn't give any reason. So we're going to get together, we're going to ascertain what the reason is, and we assume the reason that we say is a correct reason. The Chachamim have the right to establish the reason. But now the question is, you figured out that reason, but it doesn't say in the Chumash. So figuring out the time of the cross, the reason for the mitzvah, is that one of the midrash haTorah nedreshes b'hem, and you say that it regulates the application of the mitzvah, so at any instance where the reason doesn't apply, the mitzvah doesn't apply or not? So we pass on loy dashinon. It's not a drasha. It's not from the midrash haTorah and the drashas ben. The time of the Kroah is a mitzvah to try to figure out the reason for all the mitzvahs. That's a chelik of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. We should try to figure out what moral, ethical, or religious principle is the mitzvah trying to teach us. But to say that therefore that's the reason for the mitzvah, and therefore whenever the reason doesn't apply and the mitzvah doesn't apply, that far we don't accept Rav Shimon. But if the pasuk says this is the mitzvah because of this and this reason, so the pasuk itself is a dead giveaway. It says, whenever the reason applies, the mitzvah applies. Whenever the reason doesn't apply, so the mitzvah doesn't apply. So that's what the Minchas Alozai writes to explain that Mishnah in Sanhedrin, why Helenei Lechvodo is mutter, because the pasuk says, ki, kirlas elekim talui, because of this and this reason, because X, Y, Z. So he said the same is true regarding the Rosh, regarding the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah. How does it read in Chumash? Kisvo lechem asashir azois. The lambda is Bnei Yisrael sima b'fiyim. The reason why God is commanding us to write a Sefer Torah, everyone should be involved in the writing of a Sefer Torah, is the lambda is Bnei Yisrael sima b'fiyim. They should be able to use the Sefer Torah for the purpose of learning. So if you live in a generation that nobody learns from a Sefer Torah, people learn from art scroll, people learn Daf Yomi, they learn printed Gemara. Nobody sits and learns from a Sefer Torah. You learn from a Chumash, with Rashi, with Unkelis, with translation, whatever. Nobody learns from a Sefer Torah today. So the Rosh says in such a case, it says the fairish time of the cross, and whenever the reason doesn't apply, so the whole mitzvah doesn't apply. So basically, we assume Shazos HaTorah Lo Yaseh Machlefes, the mitzvahs HaTorah do not change, and even if we can ascertain what the reason for a mitzvah is, we don't assume that we're making a mistake. No, you get all the Rabbanim, we'll leave out the Reform Rabbis. We'll get all the Orthodox Rabbanim, we'll get Rabbi Yashiv, we'll get all the Holy Tzaddikim from the Aguda, from Shas, whatever. We'll leave it up to them, they'll figure out. They still can't say that whenever the reason for the mitzvah doesn't apply, then the mitzvah doesn't apply. The halacha has not accepted Reb Shimon's opinion, and we pass the loy dashin in time of the Kroah. However, we do know that in Shulchan Aruch, in any given simon, you have a lot of sifin. When you have the laws of Basim B'cholov, so the whole law consists of one line. No, you have a lot of complicated details. If it's under these conditions, then the din is us. If it's under those conditions, mutter. If it's these conditions, us. If those conditions, mutter. And any given chapter in Shulchan Aruch, you have 10 sifim, 20 sifim, 30 sifim. It's a long story. So under different circumstances, the din is going to change. If you have a slight change in the circumstance, there could be a major difference in the psak halacha. So we know that the world is changing. The laws of the Torah don't change. But the world is always changing. So sometimes we have to keep our eyes open. Maybe we should no longer apply Sif Aleph. Maybe we have to apply Sif Beis. Maybe the situation changed so much we have to apply Sif Yud, a Sif Chaf, that never came up. Once in 1,000 years it comes up, or maybe now it came up. So that's not considered the changing the laws of the Torah. If you live under changing circumstances, so then sometimes you have to apply a different Sif in Shulchan Aruch. To take for example, Rabbanim have to keep their eyes open. The question is, when you count Sfiras HaOmer, a little insignificant mashal, but it's a mashal that would apply to many other cases. When you count Sfiras HaOmer, so the question is, how are you supposed to count? Let's say on Lag BaOmer night. Do you say Hayom Shloshim U'Shlosha Yomim? Or do you say Hayom Shlosha U'Shloshim Yom? Do you say the smaller number first, or do you say the larger number first? So how does anybody talk Hebrew today? How do you talk English? In ancient English, they used to say 3 and 30. No? The maybe's in the parlor. Well, I already forgot how it goes. So it has a, I forgot the whole Gears of the Yankas. Whatever. In ancient English, they used to say the small number first. In biblical Hebrew, you say the smaller number first. In modern Hebrew, modern English, nobody talks like that. I don't know Arabic. Somebody told me something about Arabic. I don't know. You have to ask some of the people that speak Arabic. But in modern Hebrew, modern English, nobody talks like that. Everybody says 33. So what's the halacha? How are we supposed to count? So the Mishnah says in Yuma that when the Kohen Gadol would do the Zrikis, Lefnai v'Lefnim, and the Kodesh, not in the Hechel, not Lefnai v'Lefnim, do the Zrikis in the Hechel in front of the Paroiches. So he had to do the Zrikis, Achas Lamayla v'Sheva Lamato, and he had to count separately. He didn't count 1 to 8. He counted Achas, Achas v'Achas, Achas v'Shtaim, Achas v'Sheva, till 1 and 7. The more learns out from the past, you have to count separately. The Lamayla and the Lamata have to be counted separately. So the Talmud records two versions of how the Kohen Gadol counted when he was doing this Rikis. He says, Achas, Achas, V'Achas, then what's next? Does he say, Achas, V'Shtaim, Achas, V'Sholosh? Or does he say, Shtaim, V'Achas, Sholosh, V'Achas, Arba, V'Achas? Does he say the larger number first or the smaller number first? So one Tana in the Mishnah says like that. One Tana in the Brisa says like that. So which is the correct way? So the Gemara says, Marki Asrei, well, Marki Asrei, each one who was appointed a Kohen Gadol depends what part of Eretz Yisrael did he come from. If he came from that part of Eretz Yisrael where their minig was that they always said the smaller number first, so when he does the Avodah on Yom Kippur and the Beis HaMikdash, he should talk like a normal human being. So he says the smaller number first. If he come from that part of Eretz Yisrael where the minig HaMokom is that you say the larger number first, so he talk like a normal person when you're doing the mitzvah, so you say the larger number first. So the Magen Avraham says, Nu, Meret HaChidish. So have he's up in the Yiddish? He's up 30 and dry. No, it's up 30 and 30. As meret Yiddish, mitzel svira. So you gotta say hayom shloisho shloishim yom. That's normal. That's good in the days of Magen Avraham. As meret the Yiddish, you say 30 and 30. But nobody talks Yiddish anymore. Nobody talks ancient English. Nobody talks biblical Hebrew. So according to the Magen Avraham, that's the final word. And the Magen Avraham, nobody disagrees on the page. So according to the Magen Avraham, we should really open up our eyes and we should notify the art scroll, we should notify all the RCA sitter that they gotta change the text in the Sfira Soimah. We're not changing any dinim. The Shulchan Aruch says, the Shulchan Aruch has a clause. How do you count Sfira? Do you count Shloshim or Shloshim? Do you count Shloshim or Shloshim? It's not Neakiv, this is a bad example. It doesn't make a difference in Yotzeh B'Dieved, whether you count this way or that. It was just Tishayim L'Chatchila. What's the more correct way to count? But the Shulchan Aruch itself says that if you live at a time when the normal way of speaking is like that, so the correct way to count Sfira is like that. If you live in a time when the normal way to speak is like that, so you should count like that. Or for example, I remember when I was a little boy, my family lived in Philadelphia, there was no yeshiva, so there was no yeshiva education, so after the fifth grade or something, so my parents sent me to New York, I was stayed by my grandparents. My grandparents were very poor. Most Orthodox Jews at that time were very poor in America. So as I recall, when my grandmother Ben Schlicht, the only lights in the kitchen were the candles. The candles went out. It was dark. They couldn't afford to leave on chandeliers all over the house, burning all day long. So I remember there was a little light in the bathroom, maybe another light somewhere in the hall, and that was it. So my grandmother Ben Schlicht, she lit the candles and she said the bracha. No shilas. Yeah, but then when you grow up, you can't just do like your grandmother did, just light the candle and say a bracha. If the chandelier is on and the whole room is flooded with light, what are you lighting a candle and saying a bracha? It's a bracha levatola. Taisa says if the lights are on in the room and you light a candle, it's meaningless. Taisa says you have to, and Shulchan Aruch quotes from Taisa, you have to extinguish the lights, then turn them on l'shem Shabbos. The whole idea of hadlokas ner Shabbos is to illuminate the room. If the room is flooded with light, you're not illuminating the room. So the woman is going to say, what are you telling me? But that's the way my grandmother did it. That's not true. That's not the way your grandmother did it. You think that you're doing the same thing as your grandmother. You're not following what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Depending on what else is going on around you, it has an effect on what you're doing. You say, what do you mean? That's the way my grandfather counted Sfira. Hayom Shlosha Shloshma. Your grandfather spoke Yiddish. You don't speak Yiddish, and you don't speak ancient English, and you don't speak English, ancient Hebrew. So if you live in changing times, of course, the halacha does change at times. Remember Rabbi Schwab, in Goyish community, he used to always learn after Shacharis, after davening, he used to learn a sif in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch for 3 minutes, and somebody would say a Kaddish Derabbanan after the Shulchan Aruch learning. So he always used to add on some of his own original comments on the Shulchan Aruch. He always used to spice it up a little bit. It was never boring when he learned the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. So he was once learning the din that it says in the Gemara in the Shulchan Aruch that you have to wear a gartel when you daven. It's really, that's what it says in the Gemara. So he said, what does it say? But he's a hayeke, he doesn't wear a gartel. So he said, what do you mean you have to wear a gartel? So it means you have to be fully dressed, formally fully dressed. He says, yeah, in the days of the Talmud, in Persia, fully dressed means to wear a long garment and with a big sash in the middle that looks pretty. Bizman hazeh, fully dressed means to wear a top, to wear a jacket and a tie, to be fully formally dressed. Today it doesn't make sense to wear a gartel. Well, nobody wears a sash in the middle. So he was telling, humorously, he was telling an incident that he was aware of, that there was a chassidish fellow who went to work that day, forgot to take his gartel with him. So he used to wear a tie in the business. And then it came time to daven minchas. He didn't have it. So he took off the tie and he made a gartel out of the tie. So he said, moron! You don't need a gartel! The din of wearing a gartel, it's not a lochal moshim sin of wearing a gartel. It's a din you have to be fully formally dressed. You are fully formally dressed. A white shirt with a jacket with a tie. That's the way it's supposed to be. Many dinim like that in Shulchan Aruch. Take for example, there is a din, chad betray batul. If you have one tray for salami, got mixed up with two kosher salamis, you removed all the wrappers and you can't identify which is which, no way to tell. So the din is that you don't need shishim there, it's yavish biyavish. So the one tray for salami becomes batul and the two kosher salamis. Of course, it's not proper. One person is not allowed to eat all the three salamis. Obviously, he's eating a tray for salami. So I'll eat one salami, you'll eat one salami, he'll eat one salami, sure. Everything is okay. So the Shulchan Aruch has the same thing with tray for Caleb. Let's say by mistake, I have one knife became treif, one pot became treif. Let's say pots is better. One pot became treif, and all the rest of the pots are kosher, and now I mixed it up, I mixed up all the pots. I can't identify which is the treif pot, which is the kosher pot. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, strictly speaking, that chad betray bottle, you can use any pot you want. The treif pot is bottle bereif. The question the Shulchan Aruch raises is, let's consider it a dovish yesh lamatir and have a way to solve the problem without you relying on bitl bereif. I can kasher all the three pots. I can kasher. I have 10 pots in the house. So I say, 9 pots I know are kasher, 1 pot is treif. So why should you rely on bitl bereif? If there's an easy solution whereby you can avoid the whole bitl bereif, the easy solution is kasher all the pots. So the Shulchan Aruch says, that's an easy solution. It costs a fortune of money. You have to pay money for the water. And since it's tzorach lohatzi olav hatzos, you have to pay money for the water, so that's not considered a dovish yesh lamatir. So remember, we've been studying Yeridaya by Rav Soloveitchik, so he said, you know where Rav Yosef Kara lived? Of course, he lived in Tzfas. Did anybody ever visit Tzfas? And none of us had ever visited Eretz Yisrael at all. We didn't know what he had up his sleeve. So he says, you know, Tzfas is on top of a mountain, and they have to pay water. In the days of the Beis Yosef, there were no pipes. Couldn't just turn on the faucet and get water. They had to pay the Arabs to schlep up water to on top. So he says, of course it costs money to kasher the pots. So that's tzorach lahotzi olav hatzos. But he says, in America, it's a joke. What, it costs money to turn on the faucet to get water? In 2 minutes, you'll get hot, you get water, put it on the fire, burn the water, make it hot, and kasher all the 10 pots. Unless you have, let's say, 100 pots, and you're going to have to, 99 are kasher, one is straight, you're going to have to kasher 100 pots. That's an awful lot of time. But if you can solve the whole problem in 5 minutes and it'll cost you a nickel, that's not called tzorach lahotzi olav hatzos. He pointed out a din that says in Shulchan Aruch, nothing is etched in stone. Everything goes sif aleph, says under these conditions is mutter. Said based under those conditions is us. He said gimel is sometimes mutter, sometimes us. So if you live in a generation that it's not tzarech lehotzi olav haitzor, so the din doesn't apply. Obviously, a lot of times the halacha doesn't change, but the metzias changes. If the metzias changes, so the mail it's not the halacha is changing. The halacha itself says that under these conditions that halacha doesn't apply. Take for example years ago. It says in the Mishnah, it says in the Talmud, and the practice was until very recently, until everybody got refrigerators and freezers, that they used to shecht chickens and behemoths on Yontif. This is a passing of Chum, Shechel Nefesh. You're allowed to shecht on Yontif. But the Ramban, in his commentary on Maseches Beitza, points out, is Tochein Mutar Arasar on Yontif, to grind up things. One of the Malachas on Shabbos is Tochein. And on Yontif, you have a heter echol nefesh. What's the story? Are you permitted to do tchina on Yontif? You're not allowed to. So the Ramban points out from the Gemara, it depends what you're being tochen. If you're tochen grain to make flour, that's an iser deraisa. If you're tochen tavlin right before you're about to cook soup, that's heter gomer. So the Ramban says, what is he talking about? The same malach of tochen, sometimes it's an iser deraisa, sometimes mutter. Where did he split? So the Ramban explains it, and the Ramban doesn't like his explanation. Ramban says, the klal is like this, the rule is like this. Whatever malacha is done immediately, is normally done immediately prior to eating the food. The tchina of the tavlin is normally done right before you're about to eat the food, because if you're going to grind it earlier, the whole flavor of the tavlin will evaporate. So whatever malachas are done, derech suda, immediately before you eat, so that's called Echol Nefesh. Whatever malachas are normally done a week in advance, like grinding up the grain to make flour, if you're interested in baking bread or baking cookies, Balabas doesn't go to grind the grain today. She has a sack of flour that was already ground up away in advance. So since tchina of grain to make flour is not normally done immediately before eating, immediately before cooking the flour, so that's an Issa Deraisa to do such tochein on Yontov. So regarding Shkita, so that's what some of the poskim say. Before they had refrigeration, so if you're going to shecht the behemoth half a year in advance, it's going to get spoiled. And so of course you shecht it as soon as possible before you're interested in eating it. So la mahadrin, the best normal thing would be you shecht the animal the day that you shecht it, you salt it, and then you cook it today. But after they instituted refrigeration, how many times have we shechted an animal the same day? Never. Whoever, even a guy's a shecht, he doesn't shecht the same day. The shecht himself has chickens in the freezer from 6 months ago. Nobody shechts on the same day. So according, should be, and he said, there is it today. In the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, it was heter gomer to shecht on Yontif. In the days of the Tanoim and Amoraim, up until 100 years ago. And now that in recent years, that everybody has their freezers and everybody has refrigerators, and nobody shechts immediately before they're about to eat, then it'll turn out that it's an Issa deraisa. So it's not that we're saying that the dinim of the Torah are changing. The world changes. The Metzius is changing. What's the Metzius changes? So the Mele, we can no longer apply Sif Aleph based on the rules and regulations. We have to apply Sif Beis, or sometimes Sif Chav Beis, or sometimes Sif Lamed Beis. Whatever Sif it happens to be. Many instances like that. Sometimes we have, in the days of the Talmud, they established facts based on the way things were in those days. So take for example, the Mishnah in Pcheres has a discussion. The farmer has, a Jewish farmer buys a cow from a non-Jew, and he doesn't know, and then this cow becomes pregnant, is about to give birth, and has a male calf. So the question is, does that male calf have a kedush as b'chor behemah tahora, that it's kodesh? It's automatically kodesh, you have to bring it as a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, and you're not allowed to. It's kodesh, you're not allowed to do giza b'avayda. Or do you have the right to assume that the cow already gave birth previously, and this is not the b'chor behemah tahor? So if you don't know one way or the other, so you have to be concerned, it's a suffix, maybe a b'chor behemah tahor. So in the days of the Tanoim, the assumption was that if the cow is already nursing of lad, if it's a behemah menekes, if it's giving off milk, so obviously it already gave birth. Because they looked around and they said there just is no such thing. There is no cow in the world that gives off milk unless it already had a vlad. So in the days of the Shulchan Aruch, they made a survey and they said it's just not so. It changed. The Metzius is not so. So what used to be a fact in the days of the Tanaim, that's how they established based on the information they were given from the farmers, that a Porah HaMeinekes is obviously not about to give birth for the first time, must have already had a vlad from before. In the days of the Shulchan Aruch, it says that it's no longer so. So Mimele can no longer use this as a simon to identify that the vlad that's going to be born is not a pchor. It could be that the next one is going to be a pchor beimeter. The Messiah's just changed. The Messiah's just changed. I'll take, for example, in the days of the Talmud, there was a question regarding the Metzius. If a woman is going to have a 9-month pregnancy, a normal pregnancy, let's say if a woman has a premature baby, the baby is born in the 4th month. So that's an Eifel. And let's say the baby is born in the 4th month and it dies soon after. So that's an Eifel. So one doesn't observe Avelus on an Eifel. The Eifel isn't Yerush. It has a lot of ramifications. Halacha Maisin, he said, the Hetan Didi Mamanis. What if a baby is born full-term pregnancy and then it dies the same day? So that's not a nafil, unless it's born stillborn. But if the child is born alive and it dies half an hour later, dies a day later, so it was a vlad bar kayama and it died later. So yeah, you would have avelus and so on and so forth. So what if a woman is expecting a baby and the baby is born sometime in the middle of the 9th month? Is that considered premature? Or is that considered normal? So, geit avek, agansa machlekes in the Gemara, and it's a question in the Rishonim also. So, a lot of the Rishonim assume that the maskanas haGemara is that hayoledes litisha, ena yoledes limukutayim, that that's not normal. A woman is having a baby, a 9-month pregnancy, has to be 9 full months. And if the baby is born a day early, and if it dies on the same day, dies the next day, it's an Eifel and it's not a Velus of Shiva. So on the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah writes, whatever it was in the days of the Talmud, it just ain't so today. We know that it's just not so. It's perfectly normal that the woman gives birth to a baby anytime in the 9th month is normal. That's not called an Eifel. And the Ramah writes this, Lahokel, and an Issa Deraisa, a woman is a Yivama Lashuk, he has the whole case in Hilchas Chalitz at the end of Ebenezer. So he says, today, that's considered normal. So somehow the Metzius must have changed. Either the rabbis in the Talmud made a mistake, it was never correct, or if it was correct in the days of the Tanoim, in the days of the Rishonim, it's certainly no longer correct. So if it's not correct, so the din is not correct. If the rabbis give a psak that's based on mistaken information, that psak is not binding. We were discussing on Sunday night, the pasuk says in Chumash, Lo'isosim ekoladova shi'agid lecho yomin usmo. So Rashi in his commentary on Chumash quotes from the Sifrei, the Tanoim say, that you have to listen to the psak of the Rabbanim, the psak of the Bez Nagol, even if they made a mistake. I feel all yamin shu small ba small shu yamin. And we mentioned on Sunday night that Herman Wook taught in Yeshiva College 1 year, and he told Professor Fleischer, who told our class, he told the students that the theme of his book, the Kain Yutni, is that authority is binding even when it's an error, and it's based on that Rashi. Kain Yutni is based on Rashi. I never realized that, huh? That Rashi says authority is binding even when it's an error. So one of the students told Professor Fleischer that that's not the pshat in Rashi. There is no such thing. Authority is not binding when it's an error. That you can have the chief rabbis, the whole Bez Nagodol, if they make a mistake, and I know bevados that they made a mistake, you're not allowed to listen to them. There is no such halach. So even if the rabbis, we don't know whether the Metzius used to be like this and it changed later, or it was never so. But even if it was, if the Metzius was like that, then it changed later. So in the days of the rabbis, that was the psak, and today is just not the psak. The psak is dependent on the physical Metzius. So in the days of the Rishonim in the Shulchan Aruch, it already says that Yoledes Letisha is Yoledes Lemekutoy. And it says that the por hacholeves, the por that's able to give milk, doesn't indicate anything as to whether she had already previously given birth to a calf or not. So whatever was in the days of the Talmud doesn't affect us now. Even if nothing changed from the days of the Talmud to the days of the Shulchan Aruch, that means that the rabbis made a mistake. So right, if they made a mistake, a mistake is a mistake. A psak halach is not binding if it was made in error. The same is true regarding what it says in the Talmud. The Gemara has in different places, mainly a lot in Git, in the beginning of Perek Mishoch Sukurdaikis. So the Gemara has a lot of medical recommendations. If you have this kind of sickness, you should do that. If you have that sickness, you should do that. So the Rashba, in his commentary on the Gemara and Gittin, he writes from the Gonim, whoever follows the medical recommendations of the Gemara is Dama Barosha. He deserves to drop dead. You have to listen to the doctors in your generation. In the days of the Talmud, they listened to their doctors. And today, if you have doctors, they say it's not so. So you have to listen to the doctors today. That's what the Magen Avraham is Ma'orer. He raises the issue that in the Gemara in Psochim, the Gemara says that if you have meat that was cooked together with fish, this constitutes a sakana mechalila developed tzaras. So in the Shulchan Aruch it's quoted, you're not allowed to have meat that's cooked with fish. So the Jews are so, we all know the Jews are very careful to be healthy. I never saw an overweight Jew. Orthodox, I never saw an Orthodox overweight Jew. Do you ever see an Orthodox Jew who eats junk food, who eats food that's not healthy? No. Cholesterol? No, none of us do. So we're so careful. The halacha says, chamira sakanta me'isura, that if something is going to be chalila unhealthy, you got to be more careful. Forget about all the laws of kashrus. Health comes before everything. That's step number one. You got to make sure of your health. Any sake of being unhealthy, you're not allowed to do. So the Jews are always so concerned about their good health. So not only, it says in Shulchan Aruch, the sakana really only is if the fish and the meat are cooked together. So we go out of our way. You have two forks and you have two plates and everything is different, separate, to make sure a sfek of a sakana. No one wants to get sick. So the Magen Avraham comments, he thinks the whole thing may be a joke. He says, for the last several centuries, we have never heard of any non-Jew who's eating the fish and the meat cooked, and never heard of anybody developing any tzaras from this. The doctors say they never heard of it, that this leads to tzaras. So he says he doesn't understand. And the Shulchan Aruch, it says that by the Parah HaCholevis, we assume that the Metzias is not the same as it was in the days of the Talmud. And by the Yoledis, Letitia Yoledis Lemukutoin, by the 9-month pregnancy, the full-time pregnancy, we assume that it's just not so. Either the rabbis of the Talmud made a mistake, or whatever it was in the days of the rabbis, today it's different. Whatever in Europe is different. The whole world is different. The warming effect, whatever the explanation, whatever the husband is, a different world. Everything is different. So he doesn't understand why we're still so concerned about this. It's really, really unusual that this is what it used to be. The Jews were the most concerned about good health. Chamira sakanta meisur. And they went out of their way to be so machmer on the fish with the meat. And still today, everybody's medactic on the fish and the meat. That's the way it says in the Shulchan Aruch. We're concerned maybe the Magen Avraham made a mistake. So why, when it comes to overeating and the cholesterol and the junk foods and all the other garbage, that's a real sakana. The doctors say that's in smoking, v'chule. No one's worried about the real sakana. They're just worried about the phantom sakana that the Magen Avraham thinks that doesn't exist anymore. We have many dinim in the Gemara that whatever it was in the days of the Gemara, today it's certainly not so. In the days of the Tanoim, it says if you perform the bris, you would have to bathe the baby with warm water immediately following the bris to make sure that you prevent infection. And what if you had a bris on Shabbos? So you prepare warm water in advance so you'd be able to bathe the baby after the bris. And what if you perform the bris and then you realize that you don't have any warm water, or you realize you just spilled by mistake? You spilled all the warm water, so what are you going to do? So you get a goy to heat up some water. What if you don't have a goy? So the Gemara says, you better cook that water yourself. You have to be Mechal Shabbos to cook the water. The baby is chalila in a suffix sakana. If you don't bathe the baby with warm water, he can chalila develop an infection, he's going to die. So the Shulchan Aruch says, that was only in the days of the Talmud. But we live in Tzfas, and our hygienic conditions are so gewaldic, leila, in 1500s, the hygienic conditions are so much better. There ain't no infection today. So the Shulchan Aruch says, whatever it was in the days of the Gemara, you're not allowed to follow what it says in the Gemara. We know that it's just not so. It says in the Gemara also that on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to feed non-kosher food to little babies. Even if it's a little baby that doesn't even understand, it's a one-month-old baby. You're not allowed to feed non-kosher food. And he said there, I said at least for sure, lo yisafin alei biyadayim. So the Gemara says, well, wait a minute. What about bathing babies on Yom Kippur? If an adult is not permitted to bathe on Yom Kippur, Rechitza is one of the Hamisha Inuyim, so you shouldn't be permitted to bathe a baby on Yom Kippur. We talk, don't bathe babies on Yom Kippur. We don't. So the Gemara says, oh no, you can't do that. That's normal, natural. Haini Revise, whatever is necessary, not a suffix sakana, whatever is the normal style of raising children, that's not included in the prohibition of Osilis Posibi Adam. So since we bathe the babies every single day, so we're permitted to bathe the babies on Yom Kippur also. So says Shulchan Aruch, but we don't bathe the babies every single day. So we're not permitted to bathe the babies on Yom Kippur. If the Metzias changed, for whatever reason, the Metzias changed, so the Dinim changed. We're not saying the Dinim are not changing. The Torah is still the same. But under changing conditions, so you apply a different sif in the Shulchan Aruch. There's a famous dispute regarding Metzitza. The Mishnah says in Masechah Shabbos, that when you perform a bris milah, so immediately following the bris, so the moel should draw out a little extra blood. When you do the bris, a lot of blood comes out anyway. So the Moel should draw out a little extra blood. So the Gemara sounds like it says that is this accurate? It sounds from the Gemara that the sole purpose for performing mitzitzah is not for religious purposes, not really part of the mitzvah of bris milah. It's purely for hygienic purposes to make sure that he doesn't develop any infection. So the holy tzaddik who wrote, it was a German rabbi who wrote the Tiferes Yisrael commentary on Mishnayos. He was a holy tzaddik. They describe he was a Yekesh, a German rabbi. He was a Talmud of Rabbi Kiveg. He was also the German rabbi, Yekesh Rav. They say that he used to go to mikveh every morning before the davening. He used to sit in talis and tefillin all day long after the davening and then write his pirush on the Mishnah. He's a very holy tzaddik. So this holy tzaddik, he wasn't an apikoros. He wasn't a reform rabbi. He lived in the beginning of the reform movement. He was a holy tzaddik. So he writes in his commentary on Mishnayos that today we use antiseptics. So what do you need mitzitzah for? You can do away with the whole mitzitzah. What are you drawing out blood from the baby unnecessarily? You're allowed to draw blood from someone. It's an isa chavoli. You're not allowed to be choyvo b'chaver. We only require it by a bris in the days of the Talmud. Because if you don't do it, he can develop an infection. But Bizman is that we have antiseptics, so he thinks he never permitted to do mitzitzah, not b'Shabbos and not b'chol. If you do on Shabbos, you're mechal Shabbos. If you do b'chol, you're chayv b'chaver, unnecessarily. So, they almost killed this Tiferes Yisrael. Api Kairis, the Hasidim won't look in the Tiferes Yisrael. It's a wonderful pirish on Mishnah. They won't look in the Tiferes Yisrael because he, anapikairis. What's anapikairis? What he said sounds very logical, he's correct. So there are those who disagree, okay. You can disagree, you say, no, it is part of the mitzvah of Mila, the Gemara never said that it's not part, okay. But if his premise is correct, that what the Gemara seems to say is that the sole purpose for the mitzitzah is to prevent infection, so Bizman is that we have a better way to prevent infection without causing him to bleed. You have antiseptics, so you can do away with the whole mitzitzah. In principle, it is correct. In principle, it's certainly correct. Tosis points out that in the days of the Talmud, it was more important to wash mayim achreinim before a bench than to wash mayim achreinim. The Gemara says that the soldiers in the army, the Gemara says at the end of the first parak in Erevin, the soldiers in the army, we have to give them certain leniencies. It's hard enough for them that they have to fight a war. You have to give them a break. You're going to make them schlep so much water that they have to wash until it's a dime. So you give them a break, they don't have to wash until it's a dime. When they eat their sandwich, they just say, I'm oitzi in the bench and off to wash. But my machreinim, oh, that you have to wash in the army also. My machreinim is the chesakona. If you're going to rub your eyes with the salt, you can blind yourself. Melos adimus. So the Gemara says that my machreinim is much more chomer. My machreinim is a religious ritual. My machreinim is mishum sakona. That's hygienic. Hygienic chamira sakanta meisur. So Tosis writes that Bizman is, they don't wash my machrein. We don't have any Melech Sedomis. We don't have the whole story. So the whole thing doesn't apply. Or in the days of the Tanoim, in the days of the Gemara, to drink my megulim was considered a Sofek Sakana. Maybe a snake came and spit some poison into this my megulim, a bucket of water that was open. If you have a water in a canteen and it's closed on top, so obviously the snake didn't have a chance to spit any poison in it. But if you have an open container of water or wine or several other beverages, so you have to be concerned that maybe the snake came and it spit some poison in and you can drop dead from that. And today Tosis says, everybody drinks Mayim Megulim. Why? Tosis says, we don't have these kind of snakes by us today. We just don't have it. So the whole din in the Gemara doesn't apply. There those that disagree. Okay, those that disagree on the Vilna Gaon was Machmer on the Mayim Megulim and many disagree on the Mayim Achrayim. But this is not considered an issue. This is what it says in Shulchan Aruch. If a din, you have many sifim in every simon. So if the conditions are such, so sif aleph applies. The conditions are different, so sif beis applies. Sometimes sif chof applies. Sure. So if there's a sakana, so you're not allowed to drink mayim megulim, and you have to have wash with mayim achreinim. If there's no sakana, so the mayim megulim is mutar, and the mayim achreinim is not needed. We have certain situations where we know that there has been a change in the psychology of the human being. In the Gemara, in the days of the Gemara, there was an interesting assumption that when a couple is married, the woman is going to be so respectful of her husband, even if they don't have shalom bayis. The woman is going to be so respectful of her husband, she will never have the chutzpah to say a lie in the presence of her husband and to say gerashtani. Let's say the wife comes to Bezdin in front of the husband, he says, She says to the husband in his face, "You have already divorced me, but I lost the get." So the Gemara says she's believed to say Gerashtan because the woman would never have the chutzpah to say Gerashtan. Enisha miza paneha bifnei baila. So there are more rights in Shulchan Aruch. There are more lived in the 1500s. He's quoting from the Rishonim who lived in the 1200s. It's just no longer true. The relationship between the husband and the wife in marriage is just not the way it used to be. Or people get angrier at each other, and after there's no more Shalom Bayis, it's not the same. Or the world situation is just not so. People are not such Balei Derech Eretz anymore. People will have the gall. The wife will have the gall to say a lie in the presence of her husband, say Gerashtan. So the Rambam says the psychology has changed. And he doesn't think the din applies at all, Bizman Hazeh. I remember after Khrushchev was in the United Nations, if I'm not mistaken, I forgot the whole story, President Nixon asked him, "Do you have missiles in Cuba?" And he kept on banging, "Do you have missiles in Cuba?" Say, "Yes or no, what's the answer?" So he said, "No, we don't have any missiles." So then, Toche de Dibur, he showed a photograph of the missiles in Cuba, the Russian missiles. So garnished. So Khrushchev continued to be the head of Russia, nothing happened. So what happened to the Yomdina of... The Gemara has an umdana milsa davide le giluye loy mishakri inchi. Anything that you may get caught in a lie, you'll be afraid to tell a lie. You'll certainly tell the truth. Rav Soloveitchik said he doesn't think that umdana applies any longer bizman hazeh. He says, just not true. He said, look at Khrushchev. Look at all the world leaders. All the world politicians. They tell outright lies. And you find out 2 minutes after they told a lie that is just not true, and they go bite them. They're not dead embarrassed. They don't turn colors. Go, that's what they do for a living. They all lie. So he said he doesn't think that the din of Shulchan Aruch applies anymore. The psychology is just no longer so. If the psychology changes, the din changes. It's obvious like that. There was a famous incident years ago. There was a certain rabbi who said that the umdana that the Talmud develops, that... Tabla Mesav Tandu, Mila Mesav Armalu, that a woman would rather remain married than get divorced, and even if she has a miserable marriage, she would probably rather remain married with the miserable husband than to get divorced. There are certainly certain exceptions to the rule, but basically that's a rule, that's a Ruba de Lesa Kamon, it's not 100%, that's the general rule. So one certain rabbi said he doesn't think that rule applies anymore, Bizman Hazeh. And therefore, all of the dinim that are based on that rule should no longer apply as well. So in principle, he would certainly be right. If it were true that the psychology has changed, so it's true that some of the dinim that are based on that, like we're saying, any time the facts change, of course the din changes. We're not changing a din. If the facts are not so, so the din is not so. So Rabbi Soloveitchik attacked him in public very strongly. And he said he doesn't think that it's true that the psychology has changed. He didn't say psychology doesn't change. He would be the first one to say psychology does change. He was the one who said when Khrushchev was caught in the lie, Terech Dibur after telling the lie in the United Nations, that everybody was watching and nothing. He wasn't embarrassed. Garnish McGonagall didn't mean anything. So he agrees that psychology can change. He thought that this point of psychology cannot change. And he explained, if it says something in Parashas Bereishis, the way God created man and God created woman, and he thought, based on the commentary of Rabbi Samson Rachel Hirsch, that incorporated in the description of the creation of woman is this idea of Tavla Mesav Tandu, so he thought that this point in psychology cannot change. Not that any point of psychology in the Chumash doesn't change. No, a point of psychology that's written in Parashas Bereishis about the creation of man or creation of woman, so that point of psychology doesn't lend itself to change. Other points of psychology certainly can change. In the biography of the Chazon Ish that came out many years ago, the five-volume biography that's known as the Pe'er Hador, they described that the Chazon Ish was once visiting, he visited different communities to give chizuk to the chalutzim and the kibbutzim, and then he visited different yeshivas, and some one of the visits to some community, somebody asked them, "Rabbi, Balabas was learning Bava Metzia." So the Gemara says in Bava Metzia that if a person loses some property, so there's a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, a mitzvah in the Torah, Pasuk in Chumash. What if the person lost the Aveda and he was Misyayesh, he gave up hope of ever finding it, and I find it after he was already, I hear that he was already Misyayesh. Everybody in the community was trying to help him find his lost Aveda. And then he gave up after a week or two. He gives up, and then I find the aveda after he was misya esh. So then the din is that I can keep the aveda. What if I find the aveda before he's misya esh, and then I picked it up, and then he finds out later, and he's misya esh? So then the din is that I have to give it back because I picked it up before you, so I'm obligated to give it back. What if the nature of the aveda is such that we know as soon as he's going to find out about it that he lost it, he lost a penny? Who is going to go start looking around for his penny? The guy's a multimillionaire. He has a hole in his pocket, he lost the penny. Somebody finds out he lost the penny, he's going to be Misya Esh the second he finds out, but he didn't find out yet. So what if I picked up the penny before he was Misya Esh, and then we identify, we can figure out, usually how you going to figure out whose penny it is? He's the only American, it's an American penny in an Israeli community. He's the only American in sight. So if I picked up the penny before he even found out that he lost it, before he even found out that he lost it, so I picked it up, on the one hand, I picked it up before Yush. But on the other hand, it's a dead giveaway that the minute he's going to find out that he lost it, it's going to be Misya Esh. So that's a famous argument between Abaye and Rav. Yush, Abaye Midas. Usually we paskin like Rav whenever he disagrees with Abaye. And this is one of the six cases where we paskin like Abaye, that Abaye says that Yush, Abaye Midas, Loi have a Yush. It's not called Yush. And Rav disagrees. We haven't accepted Rav's opinion. Rav says that Yush can happen automatically, sometimes. If the guy lost a penny and he's a multimillionaire, it's a built-in that he's going to give up, right? He's going to be Misya Esh. Even though he didn't yet find out that he lost it, it's obvious that he's going to be Misya Esh. That is called Yush. Sure? And we paskan like Abaye, that Yush, Eloi Midas, if he didn't even know that he dropped it yet and he wasn't yet Misya Esh, Eloi have a Yush. So the Gemara asked the kasha from a Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Elam Metzias, a person is walking in the street and he finds some money. So the Mishnah says he can keep the money. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, how do you know that the guy who lost the money realizes that he lost it? I found a penny. Fine. So whoever dropped the penny is not going to go look for the penny. He's not going to spend a minute to look for the penny. He's going to be Misya Esh right away. Who says the guy realizes that he lost the penny? Maybe he didn't even realize that he has a hole in his pocket. So the Gemara says, no. He certainly, everybody who loses a penny will certainly become aware of it within a very short amount of time, because everybody walks around, didn't you ever realize, everybody walks in the street juggling the money in their pockets. So everybody's always juggling the cash in their pockets. So within a matter of a half a minute, within a matter of 3 minutes, everybody will know that they lost the money. So you know for sure that it's a Yish Midas. You know for sure that the guy is Mishash. So they ask the Chazon Ish that today it's just not so. People don't keep on touching their pockets to see about the people that I know. Don't keep on touching their pockets to see if they have the money. Maybe because I don't have so much money. But nobody jiggles the money in their pockets. So how can we still apply the din bismanazeh? So if you would have asked me, I would have said, that the din doesn't apply bismanazeh. The din is based on this psychological umdina. The psychological umdina no longer applies. So the din no longer applies. I would say, like the Ramo said in Ebenezer, that the din is based on a psychological umdina, that these are the facts. If the facts are not so, so the din is not so. So the Chazon Ish thought not so. Chazon Ish thought that the Tanoim, in the days of the Tanoim, that was the umdina. So therefore the Tanoim established this as the din. And once that was established as the din, then the din remains like that, even if you live in a generation where the reason for the din no longer applies. If the Chazon Ish were right, that the Tanoim established this is the din, based on that, so then that would be correct. That's what's otherwise known as Dovish Dominion, Tzach Minyan Achal HaTira. If the rabbis make a takana, they establish a halacha, a din de rabbonon, based on a certain consideration, then it comes a generation where the whole reason doesn't apply, so that's a principle in the Talmud, that a Dovish Dominion, Tzach Minyan Achal HaTira, the din continues to apply, even if you live in a generation where the reason doesn't apply. But that's the question, is it really true what the Chazon Ish assumed, that the rabbis established a din over here, they passed him with the power vested in them as rabbis, that they have the right to employ the principle of Hefker, Bezen, Hefker. They really made a psak, a takona, that's the din that whoever finds money in the street can keep it, because in the days of the Tanaim, this was the consideration that it was the other Masel HaMashem Mishpikis B'chol Shavashoah. So therefore they establish a din. No, they're just saying what? If the Mitzias, if Sif Aleph, then the din is Sif Aleph. Mitzias is Sif Beis, so the din is Sif Beis. That's a question. Is the Chazon Ish really right in that assumption? But we do, this is a principle that a Dovish Dominion, Tzach Minyan Achal HaTira, that is certainly correct. We have, for example, many halachas like that. The rabbis prohibited refuah. You know, there are 24 chapters in Masechet Shabbos. It's a very awkward number. Rabbi Yudanas, you should have made 30 chapters. Nezikin has 30 chapters. Baba Kama, Baba Siva Basa is one big mesich. There were 30 chapters. 10 for Baba Kama, 10 for Baba Metzi, and 10 for Baba Basa. Kalim has 30 chapters. So why didn't they make Shabbos 30 prokem? Why the odd number of 24? So the commentaries on the Mishnahs point out that in the days of the Tanakh, when a kala would get married, she would wear 24 tashitim. I know exactly where. I was once asking at a wedding, there was a Sephardi Shirav there, I was asking, where are they going to put? But they have a ring on every finger and toe, and rings on every toe. Where do they put? So he said, yeah, by the Sephardim, they wear a few rings. And so he said, yeah, he sees more than 24. He said, by his Sephardim and Flatbush, they have more than 24 tashim. Okay. So, traditionally, in the days of Tanakh, a kala used to wear 24 tachshitim. And Shabbos is always classically referred to as Shabbos HaKala, Boi Kala, Boi Kala. So the commentaries on the Mishnah say that's where Rabbi Yudanasi made 24 chapters in Maseches Shabbos. These are the 24 tachshitim of the kala. So one of the whole chapters is known as Perek Shmona Shvatim, is dedicated to the prohibition of refuah b'Shabbos. Why did the rabbis prohibit using any form of medication, or using a hot water bottle for a bellyache or whatever? All kinds of refuah are also. So the reason, the thing that motivated the rabbis to introduce this prohibition of refuah b'Shabbos was the gezeira shemei yishachik samamon. In the days of the Talmud, the common practice would be that if you were preparing some herb or some medication for a sick person, you would do the tchina right away as you're about to, as you're taking care of the sick person. So because this is forbidden on Shabbos, tchina is not allowed on Shabbos, one of the 39 melachos, so they forbade using any medication on Shabbos because it is din of Shem Yishachik Saman. Shailiz Bapizman Azeh, the whole consideration of Shem Yishachik Saman doesn't apply. Who grinds up even when you go to the drugstore? 99% of the time the druggist doesn't grind anything. It's already ground up from before in the factory somewhere, where far away. What has it got to do with me? What's the chashash? I'm not allowed to, you see, not allowed to use a hot water bottle in the days of the Tanoim, even though there's nothing to grind. You're not going to grind the water, you're not going to grind the rubber hot water bottle. There's nothing to grind there either. But they made a light plug that even in a case where the reason doesn't apply, so the gzera still apply. But if you live in a generation where the whole reason doesn't apply, so the Gemara says, yeah, that's the rule of Davish Abiminyan, Tzach Miyanach Alatir. So this is a rule, okay, this is a rule. Sometimes the rule applies, sometimes the rule doesn't apply. Take, for example, the Rosh, the father of the Tour, used to live in Germany. He was a student of the Maharam Rutenberg. Now, we know historically the Maharam Rutenberg was put in jail for nothing. He didn't do anything wrong. He was put in jail because they wanted to hold up the Jewish community to pay the ransom. He used to have the Talmidim came every day to the jail and he gave the shiurim, and on Shabbos the goyim would make the fire to keep them warm. In the wintertime they were very nice because they wanted them to live, because they were hoping that they were going to get the ransom money from the Jewish community. But he told the Jews they're not allowed to ransom him because they're asking for such an exorbitant amount of money. He said it's against the din. And then he left instructions even after he dies they shouldn't ransom his body either. It's still against the din. They should let his body right away. And the story goes that after he died, there was one wealthy balabas who put up all the money, and he violated the instructions of the Maharam Rutenberg, and then they ransomed his body, they buried him, and then that religious balabas, later on, when he died, Lachamer Simshana, he was buried next to the Maharam Rutenberg, because he violated the instructions of the Maharam Rutenberg, but he did it, l'kavadata. Okay. So after the Maharam Rutenberg died, so the Rosh understood that he's next, they're going to put me in prison to hold up the Jewish community for ransom, to hope that they're going to make some money on him. So he ran away from Germany, he ran to Spain. So they had this Yekesherov, didn't speak Spanish, speaks German. They make him the rabbi, the Rajbo had just passed away. They make him a rabbi in his Farnashi community. He didn't know whether he's coming or going, didn't know what was going on there. What's going on? A different religion, an Ashkenazi rabbi is the chief rabbi in Barcelona by the Sephardi. The Rajbo just passed away, then the Rajbo and the Rosh used to correspond. And then the Rajbo passed away, so they appointed him as the chief rabbi. So he comes there to Barcelona. All of a sudden he sees the balabatim are wearing arbekamfes, religious balabatim. They're wearing arbekamfes made from linen. So he asks, my high, the rabbis in the Talmud say that you're not allowed to wear, it's a machlekes b'shame b'silo. Usually, ruba de ruba of the cases, we paskin like besilo. This is one of the cases where we paskin like beshama. Tradition has it that Rav Sadia Goyen in the Siddur says that we paskin like beshama here, that you're not permitted to put in tzitzis on a beggar shel pishton, on a linen garment because of the concern. The Gemara gives a whole explanation, because in the days of the Tanaim, used to put in tchelas. And tchelas has to be the string, or strings of tchelas have to be from wool material, and has to be dyed a certain color that comes from the correct source. And there used to be a lot of fakers in the days of the Tanaim. This tchelas stuff is very expensive. So there used to be a lot of fakers who used to use indigo, which comes from a vegetable, which is much less expensive, and used to pass it on. There's no real way to tell the difference between indigo and the real McCoy. It's hard to tell. So Bishamai made this gzera derabbanan that you're not permitted to put tzitzis in a beged shel pishta, because Mistami will put in tzitzis the way you're supposed to. You put in with tchelas. Now the tchelas is going to make shatnas with the beged shel pishta. The garment is linen, and the string of tchelas has to be wool. But that's okay. That's permissible. If you have to put in tzitzis and a beged shel pishta, and the tzitzis string of the tchelas has to be wool, so that's permissible. That's the original din of Esed Dechaloy Sesi. You're allowed to. But that is only Esed Dechaloy Sesi if it's bona fide tchelas, if you really need it. But if it's possible tchelas, you got stuck with a faker. A guy gave you indigo, and it's not tchelas. So then you're just putting in shatnas and a beged shel pishta unnecessarily. You're not gaining the mitzvah of tchelas. You could have just as well put in linen strings. You don't need the woolen strings over here because you're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah of tchelas. So Beis Shammai prohibited putting in tzitzis, period, in a beged shel pishta. You're not allowed to put in tzitzis at all in a beged shel pishta. So he asked the Balabatim in Barcelona, how come everybody goes against the din? You're not allowed to put in tzitzis in a beged shel pishta. So they told him, no. That gzera de Rabbanon only applied bizmana tanoim, that they still had tchelas. But bizmana said nobody has tchelas at all. So since the whole reason for the gzera de Rabbanon doesn't apply, so the whole gzera de Rabbanon doesn't apply. So the Rosh says, but wait a minute, he writes in his tshuva, but wait a minute, isn't this against the principle of Dovish and Minyan Tzach and Yerach Allah HaTiro? That if the rabbis made a gzera de Rabbanon for reason X, and you live in a generation when the reason doesn't apply, like the Refuah B'Shabbos, even though the reason doesn't apply at all to anybody, you still say it's a loy plug Rabbanon, the gzera still has to be observed. So what does it help that we live in changing times? So the Rosh explains, no, he thinks that it does make sense. He thinks the Balabatim are right. And in Germany, they did wrong. The Balabatim and Barcelona are right that you are supposed to put in tzitzis and a beged shel pishta. Why? So he doesn't fully explain it. So the later Mefarshim explain what the Rosh is driving at. When do you say that a Dovish and a Minyan, Tzach Minyan Achalatir, even if you live in a generation where the whole reason for the Gzera doesn't apply, the Gzera still applies, that's if the Gzera de Rabbanon is not prohibiting you from fulfilling a mitzvah. But here it's a different kind. We have different kind of gzeres derabbanan. You're not allowed to carry in a karmelis. So don't carry in a karmelis. The world doesn't come to an end. Don't write with your left hand on Shabbos. Gzeres derabbanan. Don't eat chicken with milk. Don't eat a fleshiks and milchiks together, even though they weren't cooked together. Many, many thousands and thousands of gzeres derabbanan. So it doesn't harm anyone. So you throw in a gzeres derabbanan. So the gzeres derabbanan has to be observed, even if you live in a generation where the whole reason for the gzeres does make sense. But if the rabbis made a gzera derabbanan to prohibit us from fulfilling a mitzvah, what do you mean? That's religious persecution. The Torah says you have to shake a lulav on the first day. The Torah says you have to blow shofar. The Torah says you have to put on tzitzis in a beged. So the rabbis come and they say, we prohibit you from fulfilling the mitzvah. So if they have a reason, a valid reason, okay? So the Torah gives them the right to make a gzera derabbanan bakiras davim in haTorah. They forbid us from fulfilling a mitzvah because they're concerned about chilul Shabbos, whatever. They have they're concerned about real shatnas. But if you have a gzera derabbanan bakiras davim in haTorah to violate a mitzvah in the Torah, and there's mamish no reason for the gzera at all today, you live in a generation where there is no tchelas, so the whole reason doesn't apply. So the Rosh thought that for some reason or another, the later poskim may knock sense into it. They explain it very well. So the Rosh thought in such a case, the Dovish HaDominion story doesn't apply. Okay, so this is a consideration that we have to keep in mind. When we live in changing times, so every so often we'll come up with the Gzera de Rabbana that simply doesn't make any sense at all. The reason for the Gzera doesn't make any sense. And we have accepted this Rosh's distinction. Many poskim, the Magen Avraham quotes it, we accepted La Locha, that if the Gzera de Rabbana is Bakira's Dovman HaTorah, so we will not apply the rule of Dovish HaBimin Yitzach Merach Latir. If it's a different style of Gzera de Rabbana, we will apply Dovish HaBimin Yitzach Merach Latir. The poskim say also, what about Minhagim? Let's say you had a minig established for centuries, a certain minig. 1,000 years you have a minig. And then the reason for the minig, you come a generation that the whole reason for the minig just doesn't apply at all. So Reb Chaim Oizer writes, that there is no principle of Dovish Abiminyan with respect to Minhogim. Once the reason for the Minhog doesn't apply, so you can throw out the Minhog. It falls apart by itself. That's what Rashi writes. Rav Chaim Oiz in the Tshuva talks about Nikur. In the Second World War, the Nazis made Zeres. They didn't allow the Jews to shecht more meat than their proportion of the community was. The Jewish proportion of the community was very small, so they can shecht that proportion of behemoths. But we don't eat the whole behemoth. We don't eat the whole achurayim, the whole hind parts of the animal. We don't eat it because it's difficult to remove the chelim. So we need twice as many behemoths as our proportion of the population. So the Nazis didn't allow them. They said, Shchita is tzar balechayim. It was all anti-Semitic. They said, Shchita is tzar balechayim. They have a rachmonis on the behemoths. And the human beings, they killed 9 billion Jews with millions and millions of non-Jews. But they had rachmonis on the behemoths. So the shaila was, they didn't allow the Jews to shecht more behemoths. And maybe we can be makel on the minig. The minig, not to eat acharayim, not to do nikar and acharayim. It's a minig by Ashkenazim. Sfardim never had the minig. So maybe we should be makel on the minig. So that's what Chaim Oiz says. If you live in a generation where the whole background for the minig doesn't apply, so the minig just falls apart automatically. There's no din of davish and minyan on minhag. Rashi really says like that in the first perek in Beitza. Rashi interprets the Gemara as presenting a dispute regarding the institution of Yontav Sheni Shel Golias. The Gemara assumes there was never really a sfeiked yom, there was never really a sofik deraisa. It's either a din de rabbanan or a minig. With the Yontav Sheni, when Kodim Shik, before they established the Luach, when it was really what we call a real Sveka de Yoyma, so a real Sveka de Yoyma never was. It never was a real Sveka de Raisa Luchum. So Rashi interprets in the Gemara, either it was a Takana de Rabbanan, or it was a Minik. So what's the difference to Medreita Hin to Medreita here? So Rashi reads in the Gemara, if it's a Minik, so when you come to a generation where the reason for the Minik doesn't apply, the Minik just falls apart by itself automatically. But if it's a real takana de rabbanon, then it's davish b'minyan. So I remember Rabbi Schwab in one of his Kitzur Shulchan Aruch lectures, 3-minute lectures in the morning. So he said that in certain sections in Germany and in Hungary, they used to have a custom on Pesach not to eat chicken. They would only eat flesh. Why? Because the Balei HaTesis always talk about a problem. The chicken feed was grain. So a lot of times the chickens didn't always chew their food. Like, people don't always chew their food. So sometimes the chicken would swallow whole kernels of grain, and then when they would shecht the chicken, they would cook it. They wouldn't take out the whole belly of the chicken. They couldn't afford it, so they used to cook the chicken with the belly. So after cooking the chicken with the belly, sometimes they would notice that there's a kernel of grain there that just became chametz. There was a whole kernel of grain that never got digested. They shechted the chicken so soon after it ate, so the enzymes in the stomach didn't have an opportunity to break down the kernel of grain. So you were cooking the kernel of grain in a pot of burning hot water. So as a concern, it just turned into chametz. So Tosfos discusses this topic in Menachos. Maybe I should declare that it's equal. Anything that lands in the stomach and the enzymes are there, even though the enzymes didn't begin to affect the food in the stomach. Maybe it's all declared as mu'ukal. It's all considered gone. So it's a whole discussion. So because of this concern, so in Germany, Hungary, and many communities, they developed a minig not to eat chickens on Pesach, right? Because behemoths, you don't get any, you don't eat the stomach, you eat over here, you eat over there, different part. But chickens was always a chashash. So I remember Rabbi Schwab said, this minig was only in the Alte Heim in Europe when they used to feed the chickens grain. We live in a different generation, they don't feed the chickens grain anymore, that's too expensive. They feed the chickens corn on the cob, they feed it maize. I remember they gave me a guided tour in one of the kibbutzim here in Eretz Yisrael a couple of years ago, so they showed me big packages of maize that they feed the chickens. That's everybody all over the world, they feed the corn on the cob, they don't feed grain. So he said the whole reason for the minig no longer applies, so the minig falls apart. Dovish and the minyan, tzach mirach alatir, doesn't apply to minhagim. Said that. In each case, we have to check, are we dealing with a minig? Are we dealing with a din de rabbanon? If we're dealing with a din de rabbanon, is it bakiras dov min haTorah? Is it not bakiras dov min haTorah? We were discussing before, when scientists have established that a certain fact that appears in the Talmud simply no longer is true today. So there was an interesting essay that was printed by Dr. Karen Bacon in the Torah Mada Journal. Apparently she does research in DNA. So she wrote that all the Jews all over the world, Sfardim, Ashkenazim, Kohanim, Levim, Israelim, Chassidim, Misnagdim, everybody has a much higher percentage of a certain knach in the DNA. Like they say, Kohanim have a much, all the Kohanim in the world have a much higher, not 100% of the Kohanim have this, but a higher percentage of Kohanim as opposed to everybody else have a certain knach in the DNA. So we see that they're really Kohanim. There is some Tzara Shavah among all the Kohanim. So she pointed out that the studies indicate that there's some kind of a knach in the DNA that's passed on by the mother, not passed on by the father, that appears by all the Jews in the world, Sfardim, Ashkenazim, Chassidim, Misnagdim, everybody, except for the Ethiopian Jews. The Jews who come from Ethiopia, who claim to be Jewish, they don't have this high percentage of this knach in the DNA. They have the same percentage that the other African nations have of this incidence of the knach in the DNA. So what does it prove? Either it proves they come from a different shevet, or maybe they're not even Jewish, whatever. Something to be concerned about. Something to consider. So that's what she published in one journal. So I thought it was interesting. So the next journal, they have letters to the editor. So some scholarly rabbi sends in a letter to the editor. He never learned in YU, he learned in JTS. I think now he's an Orthodox. He considers himself an Orthodox rabbi now. So he writes, he never heard Rabbi Soloveitchik. He doesn't understand a word of Yiddish, never heard Rabbi Soloveitchik. So the Chacham writes in his essay, he doesn't think Rabbi Soloveitchik would go for this. We all know that Rabbi Soloveitchik felt that the halacha doesn't recognize any scientific evidence as being valuable at all. That's the Rabbi Soloveitchik that we learned by. Isn't that the same Rabbi Soloveitchik that we know? Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't recognize the value, the authenticity of scientific evidence. I'm a shugani. Where did he get it from? Because Rabbi Soloveitchik published an essay about the Tchelis, Rabbi Soloveitchik said when the Radzina Rebbe in the late 1800s claimed that he had discovered the correct identity of the Tchelis fish, he said it's the squid fish. So Rabbi Soloveitchik's great-grandfather, Rabbi Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, after whom he was named, was opposed to this innovation of the Radzina Rebbe, and he thought that it's not acceptable. So the question is, why not? So the two versions of what Rabbi Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik said, what the Beis HaLevi said. So the Rav used to say over one version, and others say over a totally different version. So the Rav said over the following version, that even if you can discover archaeologically, you can discover scientifically, whatever, that this is the Tchelis, but since the Masorah was lost, there's no oral tradition to identify this as a Tchelis. Halacha says that that's not Tchelis. Even if scientifically it is Tchelis, so that means that it's not Tchelis. So this former conservative rabbi understood this statement to mean Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't recognize the validity of any scientific evidence. I don't know. That's not what I understood. That's not what it means. Rabbi Soloveitchik said a chiddush, which you can ding zech with shtark on the Tchelis also. I do wear Tchelis. I remember when the Rav said this, Shia and Maria for the Balabatim, they kept on asking kashis. No one in the shul accepted this chiddush that he said. He came up with a chiddush that you need a masorah ish mipi ish, and need an oral tradition to identify what tchelus is. And if you're lacking an oral tradition, even if you can establish scientifically that this is the tchelus, that's not called tchelus al pidin. It didn't say the halacha doesn't recognize scientific evidence. He says to identify what's chita and what's sora, and to identify what is oris and what is docha, and you need a masor. You can ding zach on that also. But he never made such a statement. That's nonsense. There used to be a Rabbi Shalom Rubin, who worked for the State Kashrus Commission in New York State. So it was his job to check to see that all the stores that are selling kosher food are really kosher. And if it's not kosher, so you give him a penalty because it's false advertising. So let's say all the butcher shops, when they sell you meat, so they put on their label, they write, kosher, nishchat, it was slaughtered properly, nimlach, it was salted with hudach, and it was rinsed off. So he would go, his job would be to go to, he was a rabbi in the Bronx, so he used to go to all the butcher shops, buy a sampling of the meat, and there's a chemical test to determine whether it has salt, whether it has been salted or not. So he used to take meat, and sometimes he used the chemical test, it was never salted. Has the same high percentage of blood that every other meat has, doesn't have a higher percentage of salt that the raw piece of meat would have. So they were once going to prosecute one of the butcher shops for false advertising. He's selling meat that was never salted. So he says the butcher said, but Rabbi Soloveitchik said, he said in court, Rabbi Soloveitchik said the halacha, the orthodox halacha doesn't recognize scientific evidence. Who? What? Rabbi Soloveitchik said such a meshugana. Of course the halacha recognizes. Years ago there was an incident here in Eretz Yisrael. There was a couple who were married and the wife had a child and the husband said he's not the father of that child. He doesn't know who the father, he's not the father. He knows that he's not the father of the child. He doesn't want to be held responsible for the support and the upkeep of the child. The woman said that he's crazy. So the husband said, let's make a blood test on the child. There's a way to tell if I'm the father of the child. So they made a blood test and turned out that he cannot be the father of the child. So one of the Dayanim in Eretz Yisrael wrote a whole tshuva that we don't recognize the blood test because the Talmud says that it's not reliable. The Talmud doesn't talk about blood test. The Talmud has a cryptic statement, some Kabbalistic statement, an agaric statement that's not relevant to halacha, that the father and the mother and HaKadosh Baruch are all shutvim in creating a baby, and certain aspects of the baby's body come from the father, certain aspects come from the mother, so the Talmud says the blood comes from the mother. So if the blood comes from the mother, the father has nothing to do with the blood, so you can never prove or disprove who the father paternity of issues based on the blood type. So Rabbi Herzog was at that time the chief rabbi, this was years ago, so he wrote him such a scathing letter, are you off your mind? I'm mishugana. He says the whole world is marching ahead, and this rabbi is like the ostrich who sticks his head in the sand, and he doesn't look what's happening. He said, you're off your mind, of course everybody knows. What is a chiddush that just discovered yesterday? A new chiddush, a blood type, and we're not going to go along with it. It's ready for years and years. It's been accepted. We know there's such a thing as blood type. He says, you got to wake up and move along with the time. Of course we recognize scientific evidence. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to say that the Rabbanim shouldn't hasten to change the halachas based on new scientific evidence. He used to say jokingly, the halacha is going to be around for a long time. The scientists may change their mind in another 5 years. So don't rush to change the halachas. So he waited 25 years. Okay, but after he waited 25 years, and he still stick to it, and he still say that the blood type is working. It's still always gehalten. Or the DNA. How do they identify the dead bodies? They had a few agunas. There are a few Jewish women who are married, and they couldn't find the dead bodies. So they identified, bottom line, they based all of the identification based on the DNA, by the Twin Towers. All the Rabbanim recognize the DNA. Whoops. Because the Gemara doesn't talk about it. Of course the halacha recognizes scientific evidence. That's not a shaila. There's nothing to pilpul about. I thought that was just utterly ridiculous. There is a passage in the Gemara that has brought about big discussion. The Gemara has a statement in Masechah Shabbos that there's one of the malachas on Shabbos is Ntilas Neshama. You're not allowed to kill an animal. You're not allowed to kill any bugs. So the Gemara says that one is permitted to kill a kino b'Shabbos, lice, you're permitted to kill, because it's not considered a balcha, it's not considered living, because it's not parah v'rovin. The lice just, it sounds from the Gemara, the lice just developed from garbage. They're not from living things. Mishava min ha'ipush. So maybe this is what people thought until the days of Louis Pasteur, but then he established the fact that there is no spontaneous generation. There is no such thing. So in the days of Louis Pasteur, the Rabbanim in Italy were pilpuling about this. What are we going to do with this passage in the Gemara? So there's an encyclopedia. That was the time in the 1700s. That's when the Jews started to write encyclopedias, alphabetically arranged. Why did it take us so long? We should have been writing encyclopedias alphabetically arranged in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't know. But they started the days of the Chidor and the Malachi, and the Algazis, that's when they started writing the encyclopedias alphabetically. So the Pachad Yitzchak is one, by Rabbi Yitzchak Lamprenti, one of the Italian Rabbanim. They're still reprinting, people are interested in reading this Pachad Yitzchak. The Pachad Yitzchak has a discussion of this. He quotes the different rabbis from Italy, what they had to say. So some of them felt, you know, has an interesting discussion also, Rabbi Mendel Kash, the one who did most of the work on the Torah Shlema. So he published several volumes of his own personal Shubis, Divrei Menachem. So he has, in one of the volumes, has a big section on Malacha Shabbos. He goes through every Malacha. He has always a very fascinating writer. Very interesting collection of sources. So he quotes the Pachad Yitzchak, and he adds on a lot. So he quotes Bekitzur, there are three positions. How do you deal with this question? So some of them said, well, we know Pasteur is wrong, and the rabbis of the Talmud are right. And that's all there is to talk about. I was very stunned. Rabbi Kashi adopts that position. Rabbi Kashi was a man of the 20th century. He just died a few years ago, 20 years ago. How can he take such a position? The pastor is wrong. Very strange. He says the brothers have said we just cannot no longer accept the din in the Gemara. If the Gemara's din is based on a false piece of information, so the din is not true. They said, no, we should assume that the rabbis of the Talmud had a tradition that if you kill a kine, if you kill these lice, it's permissible on Shabbos. And they were guessing, they thought this is the reason, maybe it must be some other reason. Rabbi Tendler and others have a different interpretation of the Gemara. The Gemara says it's not part of a rova. It means it's not part of a rova in a normal fashion. It's part of a rova in an irregular fashion, a different kind of part of a rova. So that doesn't count as a balchai. It has to be a different kind of part of a rova. Okay, you reinterpret the Gemara. Okay. So that we can deal with. We'll go along. That's what is usually assumed, like Rabbi Tendler said. That's the poshup shot. We assume, we accept, we still accept the din in the Gemara. We interpret that it means it's a different kind of part of a rova. There's another problem with the Rambam. There's a famous Gemara where the Gemara says that if you eat certain kinds of bugs, you get six times malchus. Certain kind of non-kosher fish. I remember we once sitting at a wedding, so one of the Frumma Rabbanim said he ordered he'd rather have fish instead of meat. He didn't trust the Shechita, he said rather have fish. I remember Rabbi Tendler leaned over to him and he says in Yiddish, you know, if you eat non-kosher fish, you get six times malchus. If you eat nevela meat, there's only once malchus. So it's better. He has a good sense of humor. He said, it's better to risk it on the meat than to risk it on the fish. You don't want to get six times malchus. So the Rambam quotes this passage from the Gemara, and he has a whole different interpretation. Rashi and Tosfos and the Ramban and the Gaon, everybody has one pshat that kefil Allah, you get many times malchus. The Rambam does no such thing, kefil Allah. So the Rambam says the six times malchus is because there's a lav if you eat an animal that swims. And there's a lav if you eat an animal that flies. And there's a lav if you eat a trefa animal that crawls. And if it swims and it flies and it crawls, the Ravid makes fun of the Rambam. He calls the Rambam a collector. He says, ha-seif hazeh, the collector, collected non-existent animals. Well, where is there an animal that swims and it flies and it crawls and it dances and it sings and it plays guitar also? That's what the Rambam says. There's six lavim. He says, if it swims is one lav if it's trefa. If it flies is another lav. And if it crawls is another lav. And if it's spontaneously generated, there's another lav. And then he has in the Sefer HaMitzvah a long tirade. And he says that those morons that don't believe in spontaneous generation, they don't know the ABC of science. Of course there's such a thing as spontaneous generation. So that's really a problem. What do you do with that Rambam? It's a Shvera Rambam. Okay. Remember I took... In college, I took chemistry with Professor Soloveitchik, Zilchan al-Bracha, that was the Rav's the middle brother. So he used to, for non-science majors, so he used to give a lot of the history of chemistry. Instead, he knew that we weren't holding by understanding chemistry, so he gave the background, the historical background of the chemistry, the philosophy of chemistry. So he was telling us, so he was talking about this Rambam. So he said, you know that the communists didn't believe in God. Their official position was atheism. So if you don't believe in God, so you have a question, if there's no such thing as spontaneous generation, can't be that life comes from nowhere. So if there's no God, so we believe God created the animals, and all the animals come from other animals. But if there is no God in the world, so who made the first life? So they have to believe in spontaneous generation. In order to support their position, in order to defend their position of atheism, so you have to somehow reject Louis Pasteur. So they commissioned their scientists to disprove Louis Pasteur. So for money you can do anything. So their scientists disproved Pasteur that there is such a thing. They proved scientifically there is such a thing as spontaneous generation. So Professor Shmuel Soloveitchik told us that he remembers at that time many Rabbanim were so happy. They were rejoicing, dancing from joy. They finally defended the Rambam. So he said they defended the Rambam with the atheists because they paid the money. They commissioned the scientists, the government paid money that they should disprove Louis Pasteur. And now they're happy that the Rambam is defended because of the atheist position. Sashvera Rambam. Sashvera Rambam. You're not mechuyev to accept that Rambam. We lemaisa, we haven't accepted that Rambam. We assume like Rashi, Tosfos, and everybody else. We don't accept Sashvera Rambam. There is a famous passage in the Gemara. The Gemara Chulin, this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch La'alocha. The Gemara Chulin says that if you have worms, if you're eating fish and you find worms in the fish, are you permitted to eat the worms or not? The Gemara says sometimes they'll be unhealthy. So if it's not healthy, We ain't going to do nothing that's unhealthy. We're talking, if it is unhealthy, the Gemara says that his mother, Abai's stepmother, told him it's very healthy. These worms are healthy, good for your health. Okay, these are healthy worms. So the shayla is, are they kosher? The trade for worms, are they kosher? So the Gemara says, it depends, where did the worm come from? If the fish was minding its own business and it swallows a worm from outside, then it's treif. It was treif before it came into the fish. But if the worm didn't come from outside, the worm developed in the fish turned into a worm. Part of the fish turned into a worm. So then those worms you're allowed to eat. So years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there was a whole tumult in America. The OU was giving an endorsement, a kashrus endorsement, some kind of white fish from the Great Lakes or something. I forgot all the details. And the thing was infested with worms. It was full of worms. So the OU said those are kosher worms. So the Hisachtas Rabban, the government said it's okay. The government said it's healthy. Okay, the government said it's not unhealthy. You can eat it. So the Hisachtas Rabbanim, that's the Hungarian Hasidic Rabbanim in Flatbush, in Borough Park, so they put out advertisements in the newspaper, you're not allowed to eat these fish because the worms are treif. Why? Because the scientists gave the information, they said that the fish swallow microscopic eggs of these worms. And the microscopic eggs that they swallow developed into worms in their body. So the Rabbanim in the OU said that's exactly what the Gemara means. If the fish swallows a worm that's visible, it was visible before the fish swallowed it, so it already existed as a treif worm, so it remains treif even after the fish swallows it. But if the fish swallows something microscopic, whatever you can't see, it's there. But the halacha doesn't consider it. The halacha doesn't recognize it for any intents and purposes. So if this fish swallows a microscopic egg and then it develops into a worm inside the fish, that's muta b'achila. That's what the Talmud means, that it's muta b'achila. So the Hungarian Rabbanim said, that's not true. If the fish swallows the microscopic egg from the outside, that came from outside, that's also the only worms that are mutter are the worms that developed in the fish, that the flesh of the fish turned to worm. I, the scientists, say that there is no such thing. So pagina dibura. We don't accept what they say. That's apikursa. That's against the Gemara. They're telling me that there's no such thing as a fish turning into worm. That's against the Gemara. So that's not true. So the only worms that are kosher are those worms that the scientists say are non-existent. And these kind of worms, these are all awesome. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was still alive at the time. So he had already written before this whole hullabaloo broke out in New York. He had written an essay that's the posh of Shat in the Gemara. What do you mean? The Gemara over there is based on the assumption that there's spontaneous generation, that the flesh of the fish converts into worms. No, there is no such thing. It means if the fish swallowed microscopic eggs, and they began to become visible, they developed into worms inside the belly. That's exactly what's mutter. So he wrote that it's a double posh that it's mutter. Other people wrote, I think from not the green lad, from Memphis. Where is he now? I think from Memphis. So he wrote that, I think he or someone else wrote, someone wrote that they had asked Rav Moshe Feinstein this shayla years ago. Rav Moshe said it's muta. Then they asked him, could you write a tshuva, print the tshuva, because someone's going to come and say that it's us. He said, what am I, a baby, a moron? I'm going to write a tshuva. It's an open and shut in the Shulchan Aruch. There's nothing to write a tshuva. I'll be embarrassed. So Rav Moshe refused to write a tshuva. It's so obvious that it's kosher, these worms. And then it came, the Rabbanim, the Sachtus Rabbanim, and then some rabbi in Belgium, in Antwerp, published a whole book called Vanochi Talas Veloish. The Asa, the worms. The worms from the Great Lakes are Asa, because that's considered the only worms that are mut are those non-existent worms that are spontaneously generated. But these worms that we know what we talk, these worms are the fish swallows, the microscopic eggs, so these are Asa. So the Pashtus says that we assume that's the pshat in the Gemara. We don't have to assume that the Gemara is assuming that there's spontaneous generation. Years ago, there was a big hullabaloo. about chametz. When was this? Also around 15 years ago. All of the cheeses were already prepared for Pesach, and then you realize that they made a mistake. Everybody was using some kind of ingredient, all the kashrus organizations were using a certain ingredient that was manufactured by the OU on the Hashgach in Europe. Then the OU announced that they think that it may be chametzik. Then we had a meeting, all the organizations got together, So we worked out ahead. Why? Bekoshi, it may be that there's room to be makel, but it's really a question. If people on Pesach go out of their way, spend fortunes of money, they want to have everything like Mahajim and a Mahajim. So Mahajim and a Mahajim, it certainly isn't. There was a Shaila. So what did the Rabbanim said at that time? That what was the issue over here? There was some kind of a chametzdik, I forgot all the details, some kind of a chametzdik liquid, and it was converted into vinegar. How does the liquid convert into vinegar? How does wine convert into vinegar? So you have microorganisms that eat up the wine, they drink up the wine, and then apparently they spit out vinegar as a waste product, they give off vinegar as a waste product or something like that. So one of the Rabbanim said at that time that there's a din in Shulchan Aruch. If an animal was the Shach says this, Machlokes and Shulchan Aruch said the Shach paskins the following, that if an animal eats kol yemei chayeho, it eats isuri hano, then you're not allowed to eat the animal or the milk that comes out from this cow. But if you have an animal that's living all of its life on isuri achilo, then you may drink the milk that comes out from the animal and you may eat the flesh of the animal. If it lived all its life on macholas asuris, that a mutabano, then it's okay. So he said over here, if you have a microorganism that's an animal, and it's eating up the chametz, and it spits out this as a waste product, so he says, since it's like a cow that's eating up the food, and it spits out this waste product, so it's like the merag lime that comes out from the animal, to the whole philosophy that should be mutab. So they pointed out to the rabbi, that's a beautiful, fantastic suggestion, but it's against the pasuk in Chumash. The Torah says that a nazir is not permitted to drink wine, and the Rebbe Shlom knows about this secret, how does wine change into vinegar, and the microorganisms drink up the wine and spits out the vinegar. So the Chumash says, chametz yayim, chametz sheicha lo yishka. The Rebbe Shlom prohibited the nazir from drinking the chametz yayim. Why? The chametz yayim is a cow drinking up the wine, and giving off the vinegar as a waste product. So the answer is, since the cow is invisible, it's a microorganism. It's not visible to the naked eye. It's only microscopic. So the halacha doesn't consider the microscopic organism as anything. The same is over here. When the fish swallows these microscopic eggs, it's not considered like a talas that came ibachutz. It's considered like a nishava in the fish. So here also, it's not visible to the naked eye that there are microorganisms that are drinking up the wine and converting them into vinegar. It looks as if, to the naked eye, it looks as if the wine changed into vinegar. In this case, if the chametz changed into vinegar. So that's not considered, that's called an isa shenishtana. That's not enough of a shinoi to declare that it should be mutam. So that's the way we usually assume the pshat in this gemara. So just the hour is late, just to review b'kitzur. A lot of time, we live in a changing world, a lot of times circumstances change, so clearly, not that the dinim of the Torah change, under different circumstances, you don't always apply Sif Aleph, even though for 2,000 years we've been applying Sif Aleph. But there is a Sif Beis and there is a Sif Gimel, so there's always going to be a time that you can apply the other Sif. And so sometimes you move into a new era in the history of the world, but you never apply Sif Aleph, you always apply Sif Beis, there's always room in the Shulchan Aruch. Sometimes if the Metzias changes, not only the circumstance changes, sometimes the Metzias changes. If the Metzias changes, so the Shulchan Aruch says, a lot of times this a different Sif in Shulchan Aruch has to be applied. Sometimes we assume that the psychology changed, and the psychology certainly does change. Rabbi Soloveitchik came up with a chiddush that the psychology that's built into the Brias Adam and Parshas Bereishis, he thought that that's ontological, whatever his fancy vocabulary was, that's not going to change. That's built into the human nature, whatever, ontological, okay. In Lakewood, they weren't so happy about what Rabbi Soloveitchik said. They said, why is it? Well, why can't you assume psychology changes? And psychology, why shouldn't halacha change? They thought that other rabbi, maybe he is right. If it's true that the psychology changed, Rabbi Soloveitchik thought the psychology hasn't changed. He thought that it's not true. If the psychology changes, so also the Shulchan Aruch says, every so often, it then changes because you have different information. The psychology changed. It's certainly so. Does the halacha recognize scientific evidence? Of course the halacha recognizes that. You have to be out of your mind to assume otherwise. Of course Rabbi Herzig is right. Of course it's correct. Which Meshugana would think that Rabbi Soloveitchik said, who would, in his right mind, would assume that the halacha doesn't recognize the scientific evidence. Once in a while we have a problem how to deal with a gemara. There aren't so many. There's a lot to discuss. And once in a while we have to deal with a gemara. The gemara bases a din on a piece of information that we have ascertained that was just never so. So sometimes we reinterpret the Gemara, like the fish swallowing the talas. So we reinterpret, that's what it means. The fish swallowed a microscopic egg. So it's considered as if the talas developed inside the fish. And we'll reinterpret, we assume we interpret the Gemara by the kina, hari kina b'shabes muta, it's a different kind of paravarava. It's a lower form of piravirivya, it's not the higher form, it's the lower form. And sometimes b'tak you're going to have a problem, a hilchas dreifus, so there's what to discuss over there also. This is an issue that's been worked on for many years already, in recent times, that the whole secular world is realizing that a lot of assumptions that were made 2,000 years ago and 1,000 years ago are just not so. So the Torah world is also dealing with this issue. And Baruch Hashem will be continuing to work on the topic for many years to come. Okay, thank you very much. Good night. Thank you.